אלה המשפטים אשר תשים לפניהם.
OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Mishpatim. A little more complicated than that because we are standing right before the month of Adar, and Mishpatim shares the spotlight with Parshat Shekalim. We have four special Parshiot, which begin this Shabbat, and this year span six Shabbatot. Four special and two breaks in between, and that means Shkalim on or before Rosh Chodesh Adar, Zachor right before Purim, Para right before Parshat HaChodesh, and HaChodesh on or right before Rosh Chodesh Nisan. This year Rosh Chodesh Nisan will be Shabbat. Shouldn't be talking too much about that yet because we have Rosh Chodesh Adar coming up this coming, meaning next Thursday and Friday, and we'll celebrate the beginning of Adar and Yirtzeh Hashem in the next show, but we already are announcing it. So we have two Torahs this Shabbat, Parshat HaShavua Mishpatim, which by itself is a handful, followed by a second Torah with Maftir for Shkalim. We'll talk about it if we get there. Yeah, we'll definitely talk about it, Yirtzeh Hashem, Bali Neder, etc., etc., and a special Haftorah for Shekalim, which preempts the regularly scheduled Haftarah of Parshat Mishpatim. With that said, hope you followed it. Recording and first broadcast, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 23rd day of the month of Shavat, corresponding to the 16th day of February 2012, the Jewish year, 5772. Tehillim Kuf Lamed, Psalm 130. Shir ha-ma'alot mima'amakim k'raticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashuvot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmorya Adonai miya amod ki imcha hasalicha l'ma'an tivarei. Ki viti Adonai kiveta nafshi v'lidvaro hocholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai hachesed v'harbe imo fedut, v'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael, hanetunim batzara uvashivya, ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha, ha'makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara lirvacha u'miafela l'ora, u'mishibud l'geula, hashta ba'agala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. I gave a shiur earlier this week on the mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim. I handed out a sheet, two sides of the page, mitzvot numbered 42 through 94, which covers the 53 mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim. A person looked at it and said, "We gonna do all of this in the shiur?" I said, "No, we're not, but it's here for you to look at." So all we can do is pick and choose and try to come out not just with knowledge, but with a point that comes to some kind of important conclusion or a good lesson to be learned from this. I'm not going to start from the beginning. I'm going to jump right in because I want this to be a longish introduction to a song, but I want it to be for the content itself. One of the many, many mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim. Before I tell you the specific one I want to start with, let me just give you some general background here. There are 54 sedras, 54 weekly portions in the Torah. 613 mitzvot altogether. However, they are not at all evenly distributed. There are six sedras that comprise more than half of all the mitzvot in the Torah. Six out of 54 contain 55 of the mitzvot. They are Ki Teitzei with 74, Emor with 63, Re'ei with 55, Mishpatim, this week's Sedra, 53, Kedoshim, 51, and Shofetim, 41. The next largest mitzvah Sedra has 28, nothing in the 30s. So here we got a 40, three 50s, a 60, and a 70, setting these six parshiot aside in a category of their own of mitzvah-packed sedras. With that, one of the many mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim is to help even someone that you don't like unload his beast of burden. The context is, if you shall see the donkey of your fellow, or even the one that you don't like, I won't use the other word, and it is overburdened, help that person unload it. That means two people unloading a large load from a donkey creates less pain and distress to the donkey than one person trying to schlep off an entire load by himself. That last part that I said about why is my own. Not my own, but our own. In other words, the Torah doesn't say it. The Torah just says, do it. Our sages felt very confident that they understood why God was making this command, and they use it as a basis of an entire, let's call it rabbinic literature on the topic of kindness to animals. This is not the only foundation mitzvah. There are several others, but they are all in that category where our sages always hesitate to give a reason for a mitzvah if the Torah doesn't, and the Torah rarely does. But our sages realized that we, the people of Israel, the Jews of every generation, need reasons and rationales and a little glimpse into perhaps what God had in mind when he commanded something, because this helps us perform and obey and keep the mitzvot. One way or the other, when it came to this mitzvah of helping someone unload his beast of burden, then Chazal, our sages, felt no qualms, or almost no qualms, about attaching a reason and connecting it to Tza'ar Balei Chayim, cruelty to animals, and the positive side of that, kindness to animals. Now, should add also an important point, because this will lead where I'm going. The Sefer HaChinuch, a major work on the 613 commandments, argues the following. If the Torah told you to help unload a beast of burden, how much more so is it a mitzvah to help a person unload his own burdens? So now picture the scene. A guy is walking towards his apartment. A woman is walking towards her apartment. You know her, she knows you. She's just come from the supermarket and she's overloaded with a zillion plastic bags between her two hands, as many people in Israel shop that way. And you go over and say, can I help you with those packages? If you do, you should know that you are fulfilling the Torah's command, one of the mitzvot in Parshat Mishpatim, of helping another person unload burdens. The definition of the mitzvah is broader than the context of a donkey, and it applies not only to all pack animals, but it applies to all situations where you would be helping a fellow with his or her burdens. When I say burdens, I think also of mental burdens. I would say that's not the Torah's intent in this mitzvah, but certainly it's a lesson we could learn. In other words, giving an ear or a shoulder to cry on to someone who is burdened psychologically and easing that burden is in the spirit of this mitzvah as well. But let's get back to the actual. Can I help carry your packages? I would say most people have a tendency to say, no, it's okay, I got it. And that's not the best thing to say in this situation for at least two reasons. Number one, you could probably use the assistance. And number two, the person who is helping you is fulfilling a mitzvah in the Torah. Now the next step. There are a lot of people, when you do an act of mitzvah that helps them, their response is, Tizkeh l'mitzvot. May you be merit, may you be privileged to do mitzvot. A very nice sentiment. Tizkeh l'mitzvot, tizkeh l'mitzvot, tizkeh l'mitzvot. But it's missing something, in my opinion. It's missing thank you. You could even analyze it like this. When a person does a mitzvah that has nothing to do with other people, then what you say to such a person, if you know what he's doing, is, Tizkeh l'mitzvot. May you be privileged to more mitzvot in the future. When the mitzvah being performed is also beneficial to a fellow, then on the level that it is a mitzvah, perhaps the response should be, Tizkeh l'mitzvot. But on the level that it is interpersonal, I believe it needs a thank you. Because the person didn't have to do it for you, he didn't have to offer, you didn't ask. So when you do a mitzvah and you choose a person to receive the benefit of what you've done, then the response of the recipient of the goodness, of the act of kindness, the chesed, should be both Tizkeh l'mitzvot and thank you. And this goes for the upcoming Purim, 2 weeks plus from now, more, let's say 3 weeks from now. And there's a mitzvah to give mishloach manot, gifts of goodies to fellows. But you fulfill that mitzvah with one neighbor. You prepare two foods, a hamantash and a bottle of wine, and you give it to your neighbor. You're done with the requirement of the mitzvah. Now, when you prepare a nice, presentable basket with many goodies, and you give it to several people, then each person receiving it can say to you, Tizkeh l'mitzvot, because it's a mitzvah to give mishloach manot. But he has to say thank you also, because that's a mitzvah too. I mean, that's, it's a mitzvah called Hakar Tatov, and it's something that a person should acknowledge. Not only are you doing a mitzvah, but you're doing it for me, and I appreciate it, and I say thank you. If I sound like I'm overdoing this point, it's because lots of people don't get it. So I like to mention that. Now, this led me to a train of thought which I want to take you on. Let's call it the light rail. So get your Rav-Kav out, or your ticket to put into the little machine. The train of thought went to saying thank you and how you say thank you. If we were to think in terms of human interaction, of saying thank you for a gift, you generally do not just say the words thank you, and you certainly don't mumble a thanks, but you show your appreciation for the other person's gift by the way that you say thank you, the sincerity in your words, the choice of words, the smile on your face, and the warmth in your heart when you say thank you. That's all part of thank you. It should not be a just get it out of the way mumble of a couple of words. That led me to think of our first and very significant thank you every single day. Person sleeps at night. Night sleep is considered a 60th part of death. And we acknowledge this by saying to God upon awakening, thank you for the soul that you have returned to me. Modeh ani, or moda ani for a woman, modeh ani lefanecha, I acknowledge and thank you, capital Y, melech chai v'kayam, the living and existing king, shehechezarta b'nishmati b'chemla, that you restored and returned my soul to me with kindness. Rabba emunatecha, you are exceedingly trustworthy. Now, one more step in this, two more steps, let's say. The next step is, how does a person say that? Does he say, Modani lefanecha melecha v'kayam shechazat debi nishmati b'chem la rabba emunatecha, or even faster than that? Or does he sit up in bed, think for a moment, that he is about to say the most significant thank you of his day to God, and say, Modeh ani lefanecha, melech chai v'kayam, shehechezarta bi nishmati b'chemla, rabba emunatecha. Then you go to the bathroom, you wash your hands, you do what you have to do, and then there are more brachot and prayers to say, plenty. But the very, very first words out of a Jew's mouth every single morning is, thank you, God, for the soul you have restored and returned to me. And that is no small thing. That is a gift far greater than a fountain pen for your bar mitzvah, or Mishloach Manot on Purim, or whatever else you ever get from anyone and say thank you for. And therefore, the reciting of Modeh, even though you're groggy in the morning from sleep, the reciting of Modeh should have feeling to it. And on that note, I would like to play a track from an old Regesh album, actually Regesh number 1, first song on the album, Modeh Ani. And as you're listening to it, enjoy the music, but also make up your mind and make up your heart that tomorrow morning and every morning when you say Modeh, you're going to say it with feeling. And if you don't say Modeh every morning, make up your mind to start saying it, because it is a very ungrateful thing to get up in the morning and go about your business without saying to God, thank you. Regesh 1, Modeh Ani. Listening to Torah Tidbits Audio. I apologize for abruptly ending that song at the end of the first half, not even to say, keep that thought, we'll be right back, or whatever, but I decided not to take up any more of that time. I had to cut the song short as it is. So now, we've had two openings, the first half and the second half. Both of them have to do with the Parsha. I'll leave it at that and see your reactions, especially those of M.G. from Rochester, who's gotten into these theme songs, even though he's too young to know some of these things, but I believe him when he figures them out, as I do everyone else who has sent emails with the names of these theme songs, and I just found a nice website, and I take it from there. Okay. Now, Mishpatim. I plunged in the middle to make that whole point, got off on the tangent as my train of thought went to Moda Ani, but I think it was a worthwhile journey. Back to Mishpatim. I often refer to Mishpatim as one of the popcorn sedras, because it follows Yitro, which has the compact little kernels of corn called the Aseret HaDibrot, the Ten Commandments, and you put them in a pan with a little bit of heat, and they start popping all over the place and expanding. And that's what you have in Mishpatim. If the Aseret HaDibrot sufficed
to say, Lo tignov, thou shalt not steal. And in this sedra, you have more detailed presentation of kidnapping, which is a form of theft. In fact, the one that Lo tignov refers to. And you have taking advantage of people. And you have various other civil law that in essence revolves around you taking something from someone that you don't have a right to have. And that's a form of stealing. So we have a good example of popcorn where all of these things blow up. And the same thing goes with thou shalt not murder. It's in this sedra. That was two words from Yitro, Lo tirtzach. Here we have a distinction of intentional manslaughter and accidental manslaughter, and a little hint as to the exile to a city of refuge, which, without even mentioning this, which comes later in the Torah, but there's reference to it here, and a situation where a master, a Jewish master of a non-Jewish servant, who strikes him to discipline him, and it kills him, that's an act of murder also. All of these things, and much more, are elaborations on the two-word presentation in the Aseret HaDibrot, in this case, Lo Tirtzach. And it goes on, and touches on many, many, many topics. One of the categories of mitzvah that has always impressed me in the unique Jewish way is lending and borrowing. First of all, there's a mitzvah to lend if you could afford to a poor person who needs the money. So that's one of the 613 mitzvot, to lend money to the poor. If you can't, you can't. It's not one of those mitzvot that it would be forbidden not to, or it would be a sin if you don't. It might be considered sinful if you can, but you say no because of, you know, an attitude of, you want money, go out and earn it yourself, I'm not going to lend it to you. That might not be in the spirit of the Torah. But you have the mitzvah to lend money. Then you have not to be demanding of a poor man unable to pay his debt. This is one of several mitzvot that really woke me up. Because the concept of lending and borrowing in the world is, I have something, you want to borrow it, so you have responsibilities. You have to pay me back. And if we arrange that you'll pay me back within a year, then come a year, I'm entitled to demand repayment. I produce the document with witnesses signed. If I have to, I take you to court. And that's the norm. I lent you the money for 1 year. The 1 year is up. Pay me back. I can't pay you back yet. I don't have the money to pay you back. Comes the Torah and says, do not overly demand repayment when you know it will only make the person feel terrible because he can't afford to pay you back at this moment. Be forgiving. Let it ride. This is something which is part of our task in life, to emulate God, because we want Him to be like that with us also. Then you have not taking interest on a personal loan. A modest amount of interest is a normal thing in this world. Exorbitant interest is considered usury and loan sharking, and that's terrible. And society more or less recognizes that's not a proper thing to do. But a modest amount of interest is the norm. It's my money. I'm giving it to you, which means I'm not going to have it for a year. And that money you're going to try to use to make a living. I want some of it. I'll charge you very modest amount, but I should be entitled to interest on my loan. Comes the Torah and says, forbidden. You can't lend a personal loan for interest. The borrower can't borrow. This can't be waived. The person can't be a witness to this. A scribe can't write the document for this transaction. Nothing to do with interest, because interest is a foul thing among the Jewish people. If, I don't want to get into this whole thing now, it's a complicated thing, but if we make a business arrangement where I, who am going to give you the money, run a risk of never getting it back, then I'm entitled to make a profit, if it turns out to be profitable. But if I am guaranteed the return of my loan, I am forbidden to demand or ask for interest or accept interest from a fellow Jew on this level of personal loan. In the business world, there is a document called a Heter Iska, which basically says what I just said before. I will lend you the money if it's all gone after a year, because, not because of your gambling it away, but because you worked hard and didn't succeed, then I'm not going to take it back. But if you do succeed, then I want a 10% return. That is a reasonable arrangement, because that's not called rebate, not called interest. I shouldn't even call it a loan, lending and borrowing, because lending and borrowing is not supposed to be with interest. But that becomes a business investment. And this terrible reputation that Jews have gotten throughout periods of history in Europe and elsewhere of taking advantage is hopefully not earned. And in those cases where that was done, it is a terrible, terrible violation of the law and a desecration of God's name because of how people perceive Judaism. Yes, a Jew is allowed to take a modest amount of interest on a loan to a non-Jew, because a non-Jew is allowed to take interest from a Jew. And the Torah says, almost, it's only fair. But as a chesed to a fellow Jew, lending without interest is a recognition that the money ultimately is not mine, but I am its guardian, and it was given to me by God. If you develop that me, my, it's mine, then of course you're not going to want to part with it. And of course you're going to want to make money on a loan. But that's not the Jewish way. That's not the Torah way. These laws stand as a reminder of who ultimately is the owner of all wealth, and also a reminder of the chesed, the acts of kindness which we are supposed to be doing, even in a money business is business kind of situation. Another mitzvah, which is elsewhere in the Torah, related to the same topic: if the poor person gave you something as security for a loan, you're entitled to have it and to hold it and to keep it until he pays you back, unless it's something that he needs. So if he gave you his wife's fur coat during the summertime, expecting to pay you back in a couple of months before the cold weather set in, but he can't pay you back, and he comes to you and says, "My wife is cold, can I have that coat back?" You don't say to him, "You gave me this as a security, repay the loan and I'll give you your coat back." No, the Torah says, give him back that coat. And it says, if that person, or his wife, or his children, cry to me that they're cold, I'm going to say to them the equivalent of, "Where's that nice coat that you have?" And she said, "We gave it to so-and-so as a security, and I am going to come back to you and get you for not being kind enough to return that coat." Of course, it's not up to us. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. But since we have free will, we do it or we don't do it, as the case may be. Another example. In Mishpatim, we have the laws of damages. Amazing if you look into it. You look into it in the text of the Torah, and certainly when you go to the Mishnayot and Gemara and other rabbinic literature on the topic of damages, you see an amazing thing. You see that there is a judgment, and damages are generally handled by a panel of three judges, a small Beit Din, and they evaluate how expected the damages to be incurred were, that a Mexican Chihuahua bit someone and caused damage is less expected than a Rottweiler doing that. And that plays a role in the evaluation of someone's responsibility for damages caused by him even unintentionally. Yes, you are responsible for what your dog does. And yes, you are responsible to the damage caused by hazards left in the public that you caused, or even on your own property that you caused. How responsible? How much you have to pay? It's not a yes or a no kind of question. That's what judges are for. And that's what a Beit Din is for. And Parshat Mishpatim and elsewhere in the Torah are filled with examples and setting down the rules in many different situations for all kind of things and all levels of damage. And then you have the guardians, the watchmen. Can you watch my bike when I go into this store? Guy comes out of the store, the bike's been stolen. What do you mean the bike's been stolen? Yeah, bad guys came and they beat me up and knocked me over and they stole your bike. I suspect, maybe, that this guy went into another store and left my bike unchained outside the store and somebody walked off with it. So, this is a case for a Beit Din. I present my story, he presents his story, and by the rule of the Torah, he would have to swear that he was not negligent. And leaving a bike unattended and unchained is negligent. And if he was negligent, he has to pay. But if it was legitimately stolen, not through his negligence, then he's exempt from paying. But if I hired him to watch my bike, or my house, or whatever, then he is responsible in a case of theft. And if he borrowed my bike, he's even more responsible. And there are limits to it, and there are all kind of intricacies, which is what further popcorns in Mishnah and in Gemara. So you have many of these topics presented in Parshat Mishpatim, and of course elsewhere. Not to oppress the stranger in matters of monetary value. Interesting for the following reason. You're not allowed to oppress anyone in matters of monetary value. Oppress here, I don't know if it's the best translation from the Hebrew, we're talking about ona'a, which means deceiving someone in a monetary way. I sell something as an original painting by Monet, and it turns out to be a copy by one of his students. Or someone today studying Monet produced a beautiful copy of an original, but I sell it as an original. Not allowed to do that. That's one of the rules against stealing. And the Torah says you can't do that if the person that you're victimizing in this scam is a convert. So wait a minute. A convert is a Jew. The Torah tells me that I'm not allowed to cheat a fellow Jew. That certainly includes a convert, correct. But the Torah goes one step further and says, if you do it to a convert, or if you take advantage of a widow or an orphan, double whammy. God is extremely protective of converts, of widows, of orphans. There's a context in this parsha, very, very sharp. God says, you don't treat the orphan and the widow properly, then I will get you and turn your wife and children into widows and orphans. Very, very harsh. Not only that, the treatment of the stranger is in the same context, the same paragraph, let's say, as a prohibition of idolatry. As if God is saying, idolatry is when you treat me shabbily. I consider your treatment of the less fortunate in society to be as much of an affront as if you worshipped idols. Very powerful. Think about it. With the time I have left, I would like to focus on Shkalim. I mentioned that as the first of the four parshiot. The Mishnah, no, first start with the Torah. In fact, the Torah reading in that Maftir, the second Torah this week, are six verses from the beginning of Parshat Ki Tisa, which happens to be the Parsha 3 weeks from now, where God commands Moshe to collect one half silver shekel from males 20 years and up. The rules include that women can voluntarily give shekel, half shekel, and it could be given on behalf of children as well, only Jewish. And they count. It's counted as a mitzvah. In fact, if they start, they have to continue doing that. But the requirement, the obligation, is from the military age male of 20 years and up. That money was used to count the people. More significantly, it was used to provide the communal needs in the Mishkan and later in the Beit HaMikdash. The daily sacrifices, the musafim, the extra sacrifices of Shabbat, Rosh Chodesh, and Chagim, and many, many, many other communal needs were evenly shared by everybody. It's significant to go back to the very first collection and to see what was done with it. In next week's Torah reading, we have the command to give materials for the building of the Mishkan, of the tabernacle, the first Mishkan, the first sanctuary, the first temple, if you want to call it that. And anyone who had gold, silver, copper, fabrics, dyes, spices, gems, was asked to give whatever he wanted. Voluntary, to your heart's dictate. One thing was equal for everybody, and this we only learn in Parshat Ki Tisa, or in this week's Maftir, so it sort of sandwiches in the Melechet HaMishkan of the next 2 weeks. That is the half silver shekel. What was it used for? It was used for the foundation of the Mishkan, the foundation sockets, called adanim, were not taken from silver that was voluntarily given. It was from the obligation that every single person within that range, and others who voluntarily added to it, everyone equal. You can't give two shekel, you can't give one shekel, you have to give a half. If you have a whole shekel and you say, give me change, no. You go to the change place and get a half shekel, because half is a very significant number. Half means part. Half means there's another half. And every single Jew should think of himself as part of Klal Yisrael, and not in any way as a whole thing. This is reflected in the choice of and the emphasis on the half silver shekel. This is a mitzvah that applies in the time of the Beit HaMikdash. Does not apply today, but we have two commemoratives. One is the Shabbat on or before Rosh Chodesh Adar. We read the portion of Shekalim. And as a corollary to that, Torah Tidbits audio dwells upon it and talks about it. Can't really say I dwell upon it, because don't have that much time to do that. The second commemorative is to give a half coin of the country in which you live. In Israel, our half coin happens to be called a half shekel, makes it all the nicer. But in the States, it's a half a dollar, and in Britain, it's a half a pound, in France, it's a half of a franc, etc., etc., etc. The custom is to give three of them, and there's more, which we'll talk about in coming weeks, because the custom is to do that giving right before Megillah reading, and there's a reason for it, which I'll tell you probably in Yirtz Hashem, Belina, there in 2 weeks' time. The half shekel was a membership fee in Klal Yisrael, and as such, A rich person couldn't give more, but a poor person couldn't give less. These are part of the lessons to be learned from the Shkalim, which is why our sages perpetuated this mitzvah beyond the time of the temple, to include even now during exile, with the prayer that we shall once again, someday soon, be privileged to fulfill the mitzvah of the silver half shekel the way it is supposed to be. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom, Chodesh Tov, Lehishtameah.